This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 20. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
02088 167 691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. So, welcome to the show, Garris. Welcome to the show, Berners. Another week of cricket goodness.
Hello.
Where's that come from, Berners? Have you just lost us there, or what's the story?
Just fancied a few hello-hellos.
Yeah, oh, very good.
Officer Berners on duty.
Fantastic. No, it's been a good week of cricket. The weather's stayed relatively dry in my part of the world, and we've got a few games in, which has been good.
Yeah, there's been a lot of cricket going on all over the place. We've had exciting test matches. We have IPL games, and we've got even got some cricket going on in bowling alleys. What's that all about, Berners?
Oh, it's an absolute revelation. Right in the heart of London, we've got the world's first ever cricket simulator. So it's in a place called Bloomsbury Lanes. And basically, yeah, it's what it says on the tin. It's a cricket simulator. So the player runs into bowl. You literally see the player coming towards you. You step back, you get that front leg out of the way, and you literally give it a bit of a lashing. And we create an interactive game, so you can, all your shots are tracked and the scoring is monitored, so you can play against your mates. And at the moment, we've got four players that make up the game. So you play against Pakistan, the West Indies, India and Australia. And yeah, it's right in the heart of London in a bowling alley. So it's a really unique venue as well. And we've got players of all levels. So it's targeting the commercial and entertainment sector more than anything. So getting people to play the game and enjoy it.
Yes, I've had a go on it. It's a lot of fun. I tried to smash everything over mid-wicket, but I think most of them just trickled along the ground towards mid-wicket. But it's amazing to just see what looks like a cricket net in a bowling alley, and a virtual bowler running in and bowling the ball, and a bowling machine firing the ball out at you, and you trying to whack it out the park. It's a lot of fun, and everyone can have a go at it. It's not one of these things where you're restricted by your knowledge of cricket, because everyone can swing a cricket bat, and it's bringing cricket to the masses, Gareth.
I like it. It's something, and we've got half term coming up, and I'm going to spend a day in London, and I will be finding myself there to have a look, and if I'm brave enough, have a go.
And of course, for our Indian listeners, we are soon to be trekking in that direction. We've already got some notable reference sites, some shopping malls, and we're looking to put it in some high traffic areas out there. So India, the next stop, and then hopefully getting it into a few of the other cricketing regions around the world in talks in Melbourne and Sydney and over in South Africa. So it won't be long till we'll be actually able to play a totally interactive game over the World Wide Web as well from all those varying locations. So we can really identify some grassroots stars.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, it is a bit of fun, but it's great to see, you know, cricket being seen as a form of entertainment the same way as you'd see, you know, going for a night out bowling or something like that. So, you know, it's only going to be good for the game if the more exposure it can get. So well done, Berners. Carry on with that, and keep us posted on how it's going.
It'll do.
Now, let's talk about a slightly higher level of cricket. Irfan Pathan has been talking to Crick Info recently, and he's been saying, I want to become India's go-to bowler. Of course, he's a guy who's had sort of ups and downs in his career, and you hear that phrase every now and again, becoming a go-to bowler. So I just really wanted, Gareth, to get your view on what you think of when you think of a go-to bowler.
Well, I think it's got to be somebody who's reliable and consistent, isn't it, really? So if you think back down the go-to bowlers of the past, then, you know, the ones that spring to mind, I mean, McGrath springs to mind, because you know exactly what you're going to get when you go to that bowler. Equally, it might be somebody, if you need a wicket, Ian Botham would have been a go-to bowler, wouldn't he? Somebody who would come on, chance his arm and get a wicket for you. So it depends on what the context of the game is. But in the past, somebody who actually performs pretty much every time that you ask them to do something. So McGrath in terms of the go-to bowler to stem the flow or to build the pressure, and somebody like a Botham as a go-to bowler to get you a wicket when things have gone a bit sort of staid and the game's meandering along. So those are the sort of people that spring to mind. In terms of Irfan Pathan, I think, you know, one of his challenges is rather than worrying about becoming a go-to bowler, will be becoming a consistently picked player within the Indian team. Because you can't say you're going to be the go-to bowler unless you're actually on the team sheet. And that's been one of the challenges that he's had to sustain his place within the squad. And often that's been linked to his quite significant drop in pace that he had from the beginning of his test and one day career down into when he was starting to get left out, when he turned into sort of more of a medium pacer that bowled some cutters, whereas at the beginning he was somebody who could swing the ball at relatively lively pace and cause problems and to any batter that he faced. So, I mean, his first challenge is to make sure that he's one of the first picks on the team list before he starts worrying about whether he's a go-to bowler or not.
Yeah. Do you think that is something that bowlers consciously decide to do, say to themselves, you know, I'm not going to try and bowl as quick. I'm going to be more of a cutter style bowler because that's the kind of conditions that I play in.
Yeah, I do think that comes, but as everybody well knows, that wherever you play, you have to become quite versatile to be able to bowl in different conditions. And I think that's where the likes of a Jimmy Anderson has become a really, really good bowler. In that we know he's very, very good in English conditions. He swings the ball around fantastically. He's demonstrated that again this week against New Zealand. But also over the years, he's become really good at going away from home, playing on subcontinent conditions and keeping himself in the game when the ball hasn't moved laterally. And that's what people need to do, because you only play 6 months of a year within your own environment, and then you're having to move to somebody else's. And even from an India to a Sri Lanka, is actually a change in conditions a little bit. It's not exactly the same, so you have to make those adjustments, and that's why Jimmy, to me, is you know, one of the best bowlers in the world presently, is because he can take his skills and apply them in different environments. And again, you know, somebody like Irfan Pathan, he hasn't bowled in English conditions yet. I actually think he would do if he came over here and bowled in English conditions. He'd be fairly useful, but he hasn't being picked enough to prove whether he can do it around the world, because he hasn't played enough of those environments all over the place.
What do you think of when you think of a go-to bowler, Berners?
Not me. Yeah, someone who you can set a plan to, isn't it? You know, you've got to have someone that you can rely on. That's why I always think pitch vision's good for, you know, prior to games and in the training process. If you've got situations and you know guys that can hit a certain length or a certain area, which can then dictate a passage of play, you know, really useful. So, Anderson, brilliant. He's someone who I think if you know, he's the sort of guy that he could change any situation. He lifts hope in the ranks because you know, you've seen what he's done in the past, and you've got a feeling that at any time he could potentially rip the heart out of pretty much any team in the world. So I think it's not just good for the team in terms of the results, but just in terms of the fact that some stages of the game, you know, it's backs against the wall, and there are certain players, certainly in my team, just even in amateur cricket, that I think, oh, hang on a minute, we've got a chance here if we chuck the ball to him, and can change like your outlook on the whole game. So yeah, I think control, hitting certainly in amateur cricket, just hitting a line that you can set a decent field to, that would always be my go-to man, someone who's Mr. Reliable.
Yeah, I think being able to deal with the pressure of any situation is a big part of that as well, because it's no good if you're brilliant in practice, but then as soon as a little bit of pressure is applied, you go to pieces. So I think being able to have that confidence in yourself that you can execute your plans, as we say nowadays, under the pressure of a match situation, that's a critical element to it as well. But let's move on with the show. Let's finish off our introduction with our yes-no round. Of course, every week is the three questions that Gareth and I can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more we want to say. And Berners, you've got those three questions ready to go.
I do indeed. First question, James Anderson is the best swing bowler in the world.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question, clubs need to do more to retain young players.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question, bigger bat profiles make you score more runs.
Yes.
No.
So I'm on the show to dip into the mailbag. Every week, we have two questions, and the best question of the week, as well as getting your question answered, wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can find out more if you head over there. But Bernard, what is the first of the two questions you've got this week?
First question comes in from Jacques, and he's asking if someone can tell him what the new variation is that he's bowling. That's interesting. He doesn't know himself. So it's a leg break, but release at the angle of the seam is 60 degrees backspin, 30 degrees side spin. Mm. I get a lot of revolutions on the ball, and it drifts so much it is inexplicable. The tricky part is that in this delivery, it drifts in at the same angle as the spin. In other words, for a right-arm bowler, it will drift towards fine leg, and the seam is also facing towards fine leg. This means that it will actually not turn at all after pitching, but it will straighten or even turn towards the googly side. Is it possible to pick? And it really causes a lot of confusion to the batsman. So he's just saying that it's another type of slider. I'm certainly confused, so I'm definitely going to hand that over to you guys.
Yeah, well, it slightly confused me as well. I mean, I love leg spin, but I've read excellent book on spin bowling by Peter Philpott, and I'm still no nearer to understanding the different angles of release points and degrees and things like that. So, Gareth, any thoughts?
Well bowled is the first thing I'll say. It sounds like a cracker, and if I ever turn up at a cricket ground with my bat and my pads and you're playing, I will do my best not to face you, because that sounds like a hell of a delivery. And really, it's a matter of who cares, because if you can get that one straight, then it's going to be a decent ball, particularly if you can mix it in with some other variations as well. You know, that's the strength for somebody like Shane Warne. If you think back to his career, where he might not have had that particular ball, but he did have a slider that you referred to in the question. And actually, towards the end of his career, that ball got most of his wickets, particularly LBWs. He actually developed because obviously he had the leg spinner that everybody feared, but the ball that he developed was almost like him holding an orange, really, and just bowling it straight. And that ended up getting quite a lot of wickets. So a straight ball is a really good ball to bowl, particularly if you can get it to drift in the air like you say you are now. I'd be interested in what your other ball is. So if you've got a leg break that goes or an off break that goes, then it will make that slider or whatever you want to call it even more impactful. But yeah, I mean, deception's key. And if you're being deceived by it, we're being deceived by it, then there's a very good chance that the batter at the other end is going to be deceived by it.
Yeah, yeah. As to the point about it being impossible to pick, it probably is impossible to pick for a while, but then guys are going to eventually work it out, and you probably have to think of something else then. But yeah, if it works, if it does the job, then perhaps it's time to not overthink about it and just get on and bowl it. As long as you know what's happening when you do it, then great. And you, as you said, Gareth, it's a matter of having it variety, so it's not the only ball that you bowl.
Yeah, it's about deployment, isn't it? Because if you don't use it all the time, then I'd slightly counter your view, is it's going to become very difficult to pick, isn't it? If it's one of three or four balls that gets bowled, but it's bowled with intent to get wickets because it is a wicket-taking ball, so you're not using it all the time, then it's going to be difficult to pick. And you think about the formats that we play nowadays in cricket. We're limited, aren't we? We're playing 40 over, 50 over cricket, where injury, you know, the guys that are batting aren't going to be facing a great number of balls off of anybody. So if they're bowling three or four of them in the space of five or six overs, it's very difficult to pick. So yeah, just use it wisely. Deploy your special ball, which it sounds like it's a special ball, well, and you'll pick up millions of wickets. But the key thing is to have another delivery, which is your stock one, that makes that special ball impactful.
And picking the batsman as well is important. It will be more effective against batsmen who play you in certain ways. So think about the way that the batsman's playing you as well. If it's straightening, drifting and straightening, then you know, a certain type of batsman is going to succumb to that more easily than other types of batsmen. So it's if you find you're bowling it to a guy who's playing it easily, then pop it in the locker and try something else.
Well, the other thing as well, is it a ball that gets wickets when people are defending and at the beginning of the innings, or is it a ball that gets wickets when people are looking to attack? Mm. So again, you know, when it comes down to deployment, when are you going to get the best reward for this particular delivery? Because it sounds to me as if it's when people are almost defending, because it sounds like an LBW ball to me, to be brutally honest with you. I think there's going to, you know, it's going to be one that's going to hit the stumps on a regular basis. So generally when people are looking to play themselves in, especially against spin, they're going to play bat and pad together. And if this ball slides on and hits a pad, we're seeing in club cricket and in junior cricket a lot of LBW decisions now, because they're being influenced by the DRS, as we've discussed previously on this show. So, you know, if somebody is looking to play themselves in, this sounds like a great ball to bowl to remove that that sort of limpet.
Avoid leg spin and all facets of everything. It confuses me.
Is it not easier for you as a left-hander? You can, you know, the ball's turning into you, and they're not as accurate. So, you know, you got a little bit easier than a right-hander.
Not really, because I can't sweep. I never watch their wrists. Never really pick it, and normally getting a complete pickle, shuffle down the crease, and get stumped.
Yes, that's been your problem for years.
That's stumping again. Berners is constantly getting stumped.
Yeah, they used to tie my back leg to the back of the net, and they used to break the netting.
Mate, you need a nail through your foot, like one of those real big industrial ones. Get somebody with a sledgehammer, slam it through your foot, and then you won't get stumped, buddy. You won't also be able to run between the wickets, which would be a bit of a limiter. But
just you could actually give me a brain transplant as well. That could also work, but yeah, probably not quite so much fun for whoever's doing it. Next question comes in from Uj Walaga. He is 18 and he's just completed his 12th year in school, and he's requiring some very, very, very important information, which is regarding which field he's to choose in life. He's asking for life decisions now, guys. He wants to know, is it sports or engineering, and can he still choose a career in cricket? So I'm going to have to help this young man out, it sounds like.
Well, yeah, I think you can. I think balance is really important. And also we know that cricket is a later specialisation sport. So it's not necessarily vital that you make decisions at such a young age. I think the crucial bit, really, if you're looking to play cricket as a career, is that you're already on the pathway. You're already in a standard of cricket where your performances are going to be recognised by the next level of cricket above you. So if you're playing good level Premier League cricket or decent league cricket, then you want your state or your local cricket organisation to be keeping an eye on you and on your performances, or already be involved in some of their teams. So, you know, if you're playing club cricket and you're not being monitored, then you need to find a way of being monitored, or it could be a good decision to concentrate more on the engineering side of things.
Yeah, it is a difficult area for a lot of people, isn't it? You know, people get to that point where they have to choose. I mean, as long as possible, you wanna keep as many options open as you can. So there's no reason why you can't keep moving down both routes as long as possible. But then when you get to the point where you do have to choose, it's a matter of an individual decision. Nobody can say. Nobody can say for sure, especially when you're talking about a podcast where we don't know anything about this person. Nobody can say for sure which way is the best way to go. So if you enjoy playing cricket and you're good at playing cricket and you feel like you have a pathway, as you said, Gareth, you have a pathway, then perhaps that's the way to go. And if not, if you enjoy engineering and you're good at engineering and you have a pathway into engineering, perhaps that's the way to go. And you can always still do one for fun and one for a job for quite a long time, I would think. I mean, I don't know how many people do engineering for fun, but but maybe you can, you know, stay involved in some way or another, and as you progress through your cricketing career.
I think the crucial thing, if you are thinking about professional cricket as an option, is to see how valid your, you know, that is as an option. There's always people to ask, isn't there? And that's where coaches at the local state or county or whatever, wherever you are in the world, always look to get their views on it, because the last thing you want to be doing is putting a huge amount of effort into something that hasn't got a chance of happening, because you could be applying it into something else, for example, like your engineering career as well. So it's important to have your view of where you are validated if you are looking towards going into professional cricket. And whilst a coach should never tell somebody at the age, you know, a young age, that they're not going to become a professional cricketer, because I think that's a really difficult and tricky thing to say, and is fraught with danger as a coach. Mm. When somebody gets towards 18, they either got a semblance of a chance, really, or they've got absolutely no chance in there. So have a discussion, talk to some people that you respect, go to people that will actually influence your progression going forward if you are to go into professional cricket, and just validate where you are. And then you can use your time and apply your time into cricket in an appropriate fashion. So, you know, if you're not going to become, because you really haven't got a chance of playing professional cricket, then you can look towards the more professional side of engineering whilst still playing in the game. Because as you say, David, you know, it's a great game to be involved in. There are so many benefits from a social perspective and a competitive perspective that you can stay involved with. So just validate. That would be my first thing. And I always ask that question to kids that say, I want to become a professional cricketer. Where are you on the pathway, and who are you working with that you can get a view? Because it's blooming difficult, isn't it, to look at somebody in a snapshot or to have a conversation over a podcast and decide whether anybody's going to become a professional cricketer or not. And I've known a lot of coaches that have said, oh, you've got no chance. And actually, those guys have ended up being really good. And sometimes a coach saying you've got no chance has acted as a spur and motivation to make people strive even harder. And somebody like Graham Smith is an example of that. You know, he got told by more than one coach when he was 17, 18, that he had no chance of playing first class cricket. And look what he's gone on to do. So I think it's difficult for coaches to do it, but equally get an idea of where you are from the external perspective of a coach or an organisation before you put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah. And of course, there are other jobs in cricket apart from playing. There's analyst type jobs and there's coaching type jobs. So there are other ways that you can make a career in cricket without necessarily playing professionally. So that's another option which is always worth exploring. But I wanted to ask you, Gareth, have you ever had to have a conversation with a player who is absolutely determined that they're going to make a career in cricket, but in your opinion, you think that the chance is slim?
Yeah, I have had a conversation along those lines. I would never discount them, particularly if they're sort of 16, 17, I would never discount them. But I would make it very clear of what the next stages are and what it involves. And, you know, in terms of fitness, in terms of commitment, in terms of the way that they need to train in the interim period to get to that level. So I will give them a very realistic view rather than saying, no, you're not good enough. Because often it's a journey that people don't want to go. And, you know, because it is blooming hard work. Yeah, there's no two ways about it. Nowadays in cricket, it's a very physical game. And I had a conversation with a young lad the other day who asked me what he needed to do. He's only 13. What he needed to do. And I said, well, you need to be aware of the physical side of a game, and you need to be aware of the way that professionals and people who are aspiring professionals train, which is to push themselves to the edge of comfortable for long periods of time. And he actually was really motivated by that, because that's the way that he likes to work. But equally, you can have a conversation with somebody who wouldn't be motivated in that, and it may help them decide what they want to get out of their cricket going forward. So I think being as realistic as possible and having the information available to make an informed decision is very, very important.
Now, Bernard, I know when you were younger, you were involved in the system that was moving towards professional cricket, but a time came where that didn't happen. What was that decision period for you?
I mean, I played throughout the age groups for Devon. I then went to the UCCE at Glamorgan. I guess that's where it kind of really came to loggerheads, where you play the first year and it kind of you kind of get distinguished from the, you know, the boys from the men, so to speak. You're playing against first-class counties. We were training with Glamorgan. It all gets turned up an octane. You're also in a quite a developmental time in your life, studying for a degree. So it really did test, you know, your whole kind of outlook, not just on cricket but on life. And got into the second year of doing that, and it kind of just literally just all got a little bit too much for me. As we all know, I'm not the most academic person in the world, but having to study and also get up early and train and then play at this high level where guys were bowling 80 miles an hour plus at me in the nets, and I'm used to facing, you know, club bowlers or guys from the university cricket, to then going to play against Glamorgan second team players who were built, you know, they were professional cricketers. So you wouldn't get many loose balls in the nets. When you bowled, you got punished. When you did fielding drills, you know, every time you fumbled something, you felt like you'd fallen off the edge of a cliff. And suddenly then I started to not only see that other players were far better than me, I also started to think to myself, maybe you're not quite cut out for this, and, you know, maybe you're not quite good enough. So for me, I think mentally, through playing and being in that environment, it taught me, you know, that maybe it wasn't quite for me. I mean, I still was dogged. I still wanted it. But, yeah, it wasn't quite there. And I was thinking, well, I'm on the brink of the standard. I've still got about another three levels to go up from here, you know, when you're playing first team cricket and then if you played international cricket. So, yeah, I certainly sit here behind the TV now and admire the skills that these guys execute at the top level, which, you know, often get criticised, but at the end of the day, they've done something right to get there. And that was my story. It was second year of university. I think also Cardiff's nightlife had a lot to do with it. I enjoyed that side of the student lifestyle as well. But it was fun. It was fun and it was a challenge. And for anyone out there, you know, do anything at the highest level that they can, I would think is a massive achievement to yourself as well, more so than whether you do or don't make it.
Okay, time for 60 seconds of some kind of a rant. And, this week on the soapbox, it's Mark Garraway. 1 minute, over to you.
In a game that we played last week against a very professional men's outfit, we ran between the wickets probably better than we had done over a number of years at the school, which has been fantastic. And one of the things that we've done is we found it difficult to understand that the only time we practice running between the wickets is actually in the match itself, which is bananas, isn't it? So if I asked Johnny Wilkinson that he wasn't able to do any kicking for goal in preparation for the European Cup final last weekend, and he would just have to do his practice when he was actually out in front of 60,000 people kicking for posts, then he'd probably look at me a bit stupidly. But that's actually what we do within our cricket. We only ever run between the wickets when we're out in the middle. So can you put something together in your nets that makes it really realistic, that makes the calling come into play, that gets people batting in pairs? So I'll be interested to hear from others that try this, because I'm going to give you some views in my column this week on running between the wickets in net sessions.
Okay, that just about wraps it up for this week. But before we go, we just have a little bit of housekeeping to do. And that is, of course, to decide on our winner of this week's prize, which is, of course, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had Jack's question about 60 degrees of backspin and 30 degrees of side spin, which bamboozled us all. And we have Ujwalaga's question about engineering or cricket. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
I'm going to go for Udge.
Udge,
because I like the question about balance, because it happens for so many people, doesn't it? You know, everybody is keen to play professional cricket, but also they've got other aspects of their life that they need to balance up, and it's a key decision around that age that he's at in his 12th year of school or in education. So yeah. I think it's a good question, and this week Udge wins it.
And we got a good story from Berners about how things happened with him as well, which was quite interesting. And another story from Berners immediately afterwards, which I had to edit out, which we can't possibly put into the podcast. So if you want to know what that story is, drop me an email.
I might repeat a clean version next week, actually. I might actually write a script.
Oh, well, okay. Well, you have to subscribe to the show. I'll give you the subscribe details in a second. But before that, if someone wanted to send in a question, and maybe that's a question, what was that story, Berners? Then how would they get in touch?
They can give us a call at 02088 167691, or drop us an email. coach@pitchvision.com is the address.
Correct. Our Twitter is at PV Cricket Coach. You can find us on Facebook. If you just do a little search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find the Facebook page there with lots of videos and articles on it. If you want to subscribe to the show, then you can do. Just head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us there. Or if you don't want to use iTunes, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link in the green bar at the top, and follow the instructions for the RSS feed. That's all for this week, so until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, lads.
Adios.